granularity of the information, because it's very hard for constituencies or the community to judge how effective ICANN is being, spending the money that it spends, if we can't really clearly see where that money is being spent. So an example was used that if it all just goes under travel, is that travel in order for outreach? Is it travel for the board? Is it travel for something else? So there's a degree of granularity which would be helpful. Balancing that is the fact that the budget is 70-odd million now, and kind of granularity on a budget of 70 million on what was that trip for depends upon ICANN staff and other people filling in a code appropriately. And until now, ICANN has not been very well equipped with financial management software. So I think everyone is kind of going to wait and see to the end of this year to see what kind of detail can come out. So that was the first issue. The second issue that I picked up was to do with the opportunities for interaction between requests being submitted and them being rejected or approved, and that a lot of constituencies had raised concerns that you put something in and then the first you really hear about it is when you've been rejected, and that was felt to be less than satisfactory. And then the third kind of bigger debate that took a lot of time was the extent to which policy is influenced by the financial department's need to get a working budget approved. And that probably is something which all organisations with a turnover of kind of 70 million face, that there are issues around that. So what I'd recommend is people go on the website and they have a look. That was the first, that was the most important and pressing date that I picked up on the 9th of December. On the 17th of January, the financial framework is going to be published for a comment period, I think, of 45 days. But I'd recommend you all go and have a look.
Great. Thanks, Nick. I just wanted to add on behalf of Steve Metallitz from the chat room that a team has been formed with other constituencies in the commercial stakeholder group to monitor the budget process throughout the year, and to please reach out to him if you'd like to get involved. They could definitely use one or two volunteers to assist with that project. So please feel free to reach out to Steve or let me know, and I'm happy to get you in touch with him. Anyone else have anything to add regarding budgeting? Christina?
I actually have a question for Wendy, and that is, to the extent that we wanted to try and explore what possibilities there might be for joint budget requests with, you know, either the NCUC or the NCSG, who would be the point person for that?
I would refer it to our NCSG chair, Robin, and there is a finance committee of the NCSG that I think that sounds like a great proposal.
Great, thanks. Anyone else have any questions or anything else to add regarding the budget topic? Seeing silence, the chat room's quiet. All right, I would like to make a call now for any other topics or comments that people would like to put on the table. That actually concludes our brief agenda that I put together.
Well, let's go. What I can do is go through the council agenda for the meeting tomorrow, which is, on the one hand, not most of it is not terribly controversial, but one bit of it is, in fact, very controversial. There are several motions that will be voted on tomorrow. The meeting starts at 2 o'clock, and the first hour of it, we're trying something new to avoid it being rather the kind of tedious exercise that it's become for people who aren't actually having to participate directly. So for the first hour is actually going to be presentations by the stakeholder and constituency group leaders as to not only topics that were discussed during constituency / stakeholder group day, but also kind of what the hot items on the respective agendas are. And Paul McGrady has volunteered to take that on for us. So that'll be the first hour of it. And then starting at 3:30, we'll move into kind of the actual meeting. Going through a pending projects list, one thing that is occupying more of the council's time is really kind of as new projects are coming up, trying to figure out how to prioritize The staff made very clear during the council working sessions that they really are at the limit of their resources, and that kind of going forward, they will be doing work on a first-in, first-out basis, and that even if, for example, the council has passed a motion calling for an issues report and the bylaws call for that issues report to be delivered in 45 days, if they simply don't have the staff bandwidth to get it done, that it will frankly just get done when it gets done, which is not ideal, but I, for one, don't really have any great ideas as to, you know, how to deal with that. Then kind of the first substantive motion is a motion that I have introduced on amendments to the RAA. This is actually the third iteration of this motion. It basically, there's very, very long history to it, but the long and the short of it is that it identifies a way forward for discussing topics as potential amendments to the RAA. For those of you who may not remember or weren't involved back when we voted on the council voted on the last, what is the current version of the RAA in March of 2009, there were a number of topics that had been brought up that did not make their way into the agreement itself. And as a condition for voting to pass the agreement, the non-contracted party house insisted that there be a plan for moving forward. And so we're now on the third iteration of motions to try and get that plan going. The past two motions have been block votes where the non-contracted party house has voted for the motion as a block and the contracted party house has voted against it, which means that it hasn't passed. I frankly have no idea how the vote's going to go. Up until probably Sunday midday, I would have said this one's going to get defeated too. But in light of the rather stern conversation, I guess is probably the best way to put it, between the GAC and the Registrar Stakeholder Group during the GNSO Council meeting, it may be the case that, you know, the Registrar Stakeholder Group, or at least enough of them to get it to pass, will vote for it. I don't have the foggiest idea and wouldn't put money on how it's going to turn out.
Christina, I'm sorry, could you just quickly, for people who are new in the room, could you just give them a little bit of background on the RAA and what it is?
Or we could ask Elliot, too. No, I'm sorry. No, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement is the standard form agreement that all entities that wish to operate as ICANN-accredited registrars must sign once they've undergone the accreditation process. It is, unlike the registry agreements, a very standard form agreement, and it was last amended in 2009. I'm not really quite sure what else to say while trying to stay objective.
I would just encourage subjectivity, because seriously, I think that certainly one of my goals here is to try and, sort of help to, again, have less public and more, you know, sort of productive discussions, and so subjectivity would be great, I think.
I think realistically, I mean, I think probably the only thing I can say at this point is that at least it's my sense that from a significant portion of the community, that if this motion fails, that there's probably going to be a fairly strong effort to pursue changes to the agreement indirectly through other fora outside the ICANN world. And I'm not sure, I can't imagine that that's a good outcome for anyone, frankly, for any of the players. And I also don't think it's a good outcome for ICANN, because it then, I think, highlights that there are certain subjects on which the multi-stakeholder model isn't or can't work, which I think has some really pretty troubling implications. So, you know, I really hope that we can get this move forward.
Wendy?
If you'll permit an observer to add a comment from our constituency, we were considering proposing an amendment to this motion to divide some of the procedural from the substantive issues, because this has been a procedural debate for a long time about how the RAA should get amended and the transparency of that process. The debate has never delved down to the level of the items being proposed to be added, and NCUC agrees very much with the procedural transparency, disagrees with some of the items that are marked as high priority for eventual inclusion, and we would propose to strip out the endorsement of all of those items from the motion. I wondered if this would be an appropriate time to discuss that briefly.
We could. I'm inclined to say it's not going to be accepted as a friendly amendment, primarily because, you know, as you know, the council used to work very much as a policymaking body, and we've been instructed under the new structure to work as a policy management body. And as a result of that, and I think we saw in Singapore, that when, you know, these topics came out of a joint drafting team that had members from, I think, everybody except from the registry stakeholder group. And I think that there is concern kind of generally on when the council starts kind of picking and choosing particular items out of the work product of these, whether you call it a drafting team or whether it's a formal working group. And I think the other point is that kind of from a more substantive level, you know, the fact that they were identified as high and medium priority topics doesn't necessarily mean that they will actually materialize into amendments. And in fact, you know, one of the bones of contention that the registry stakeholder group in particular had with this was that in earlier iterations of the motion, that the GNSO council and staff would first take this big list of topics and figure out which were the subject of consensus policy, in which case they would go through PDP, and that which were not, in which case they would then go through the negotiating process. So that has now been moved to the general counsel's office. So, you know, given that there's a fairly decent likelihood that I at least half of the topics in each category are going to end up being deemed to be consensus policy, I'd be reluctant to kind of constrain things from the very outset in that way. And frankly, if we strip that out, what topics do we use? Is there a proposed alternative list?
Beyond the proposal would be to generate a list at the council level.
I think the community is going to have some issues with that. I mean, I know that particularly within the CSG, there's a real strong desire to make sure that the council is only acting as the council and not acting as the GNSO.
Grace, I wanted to put in some comments on behalf of Steve Metallitz from the chat room. He first of all wanted to indicate that there are detailed proposals on the changes that we'd like to see the RAA that he'd be happy to share with Elliot, and of course anyone else who's interested. Also, he just wanted to mention that he agrees with Christina's remarks, and he thinks the GAC discussion underscores what Christina said earlier. And finally, he's indicated that ICANN staff has already opined that none of the topics identified are a priority required to go through PDP consensus process. Great. Anyone else have any comments or questions? Go ahead, Paul.
I jokingly said to Christina on the way in that I wanted to put forth a motion to name her Queen Emeritus of the IPC and to designate some funds to send a tiara to her home later. But on a serious note, I think we would be remiss to not thank Christina for all of her amazing good work on the GNSO Council. I have never encountered someone with so much passion and drive and consistency in this sort of role before, and I think that we have been very fortunate as a constituency to have you in that role.
Yeah. Thank you. that or I'm just stupid.
And just, Christine, to let you know that Stephen Talbot seconds Paul's sentiments. And Christine's reign is clapping in the chat room. Claudio?
I just had a question for Elliot. In terms of whether the registrars had a chance to take a look at what the staff put out and if you guys had any reaction to that, or I'm not sure if you're discussing that today or anything.
Specifically?
There was a staff paper about how, you know, they were suggesting a way forward and outlined the process. I mean, my understanding.
You're talking about the
RAA? Yes.
So I just kind of looked through what was A, and I've seen Christina's B. I mean, the one thing, again, you know, I don't want to kind of put registrar positions into the room, but I think that the third rail issue is typically where things end up. I think registrars, and you know, I can't speak personally. You know, we are certainly extremely comfortable with a very transparent, evolved, detailed process for taking input, gathering requirements. I think that where there's always a struggle in form and in substance is where the actual negotiating is done between multiple parties, and I think that the current iteration of B, you know, is kind of a rose by another name, because you know, it's sort of get to this point, can't do it, come back, get input, come back and get input. And you know, the one thing that I would stress personally, I just think that's just to frame it. I think that we've all as a community spent so much time on procedural issues and so, relatively speaking, little time on substantive issues. And to me, that's just a shame and not as productive as it could be. And, you know, one of the things that I'm personally trying to push for a lot more and you know, in fact, made some progress on other issues today inside of registrars was to do more bilaterally. And, you know, again, that's one of my goals to, you know, to start to be here is to try and accomplish that. I think that it should be so much more about getting things done as opposed to how we get things done. And you know, one of the really important issues that I think doesn't get thought through well enough is that when something's in the RAA, the mechanism for dealing with it is the compliance department. So, you know, we can think about the compliance department and essentially the RAA police. And I think that so many of the issues, especially, you know, your guys' issues, and when I say your guys, I don't mean trademark holders, but counsel, are things that end up necessarily being dealt with in the legal system. And, you know, we find, you know, boy, we're dealing with 10% of the issues just by nature of our size as a registrar. And there is such a delta in the effectiveness of dealing with informed and polite counsel versus uninformed and impolite counsel. I mean, it's just, you know, it's spin cycle and people are getting things done. And so, you know, I'd love to bring some of that, you know, into this process. I always feel like it's such a shame that, you know, you sit and watch counsel and it's so win-lose, you know, it's so adversarial. It's so much about scoring points and winning positions. And, you know, that's just the construct we've all created. That's not, you know, hey, that's you guys or us or whatever. And so, you know, at least in parallel, you know, by all means, you know, what will happen there, I'm not on council, will happen. But at least in parallel, I'd really encourage, you know, substantively, bilaterally, trying to chop up some of these issues and seeing if there's ways to deal with them.
Thank you. Very helpful. I wasn't sure if it was clear the way I phrased the question, but I wasn't sure if you looked at the staff paper itself, not the motion that.
No,
okay, so you have.
Is there something specific in the paper that you would call to my attention that I should have looked at?
The only thing that I would note, Elliot, and I would assume that your colleagues will mention this in the meeting later today, but I had indicated, although, you know, hopefully clearly, that if it was the view of the registrar stakeholder group that the way set forward in the staff paper is a way that they would prefer, and, you know, one of the registrar representatives would offer up a friendly amendment to basically strip out the guts of my motion with a motion that would adopt that I would certainly accept that.
Yeah, so I don't know. What I can say is to the extent...
Right, I just want to make sure that you're clear, that to the extent that they may not have understood that that's what I was saying.
Yeah, I can check in on that, but you know, to the extent the staff paper lines up with kind of that that third rail issue that I outlined, it's kind of where does this end up? You know, who ends up doing the negotiating of the contract? You know, I think that would probably be determinative as to whether they were comfortable with it or not.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions or comments about the REA? Christina, I was wondering if you could take a minute to just kind of update everyone on where things stand with the potential UDRP review.
Okay, so we got the final issues report. One of the other motions we're going to vote on in council is to adopt the recommendations of the PDP, the Policy Development Process Work Team, which basically, after 2 years, has come forward with a very broad and detailed renovation of the policy development process. And one of the, I think, kind of more visible improvements in that process is that instead of just having the staff create an issues report, under the new process, staff creates a preliminary issues report. That report goes out for public comment, and then staff incorporates those comments and generates a final issues report, and it's that final issues report that council votes on. We received the final issues report, I'd say, about a week and a half ago. There is no motion currently pending before council. There was some discussion of the issues report. I wouldn't even be willing to venture a bet as to how that's going to play out. What I would say is that we probably will see at the next council meeting a motion, which will likely be deferred in keeping with the council's usual practice of any constituency or stakeholder group that wants to defer action once on a motion can request it. So 2 meetings from now, I would imagine we'll have a vote.
Thank you, Christina. Does anyone have any updates or comments they'd like to provide regarding the UDRP or potentially reviewing it? Go ahead, come on up.
Does this work? Can you hear me? This will be very brief. Eric Wilbers, Wilton Dutch Property Organization. The position of the UDRP. We've had, and the UDRP, by the way, has had maybe an interesting statistic in the room, less than one in, I think, 1,000 names in a DNS. It's a very conservative estimate that's actually ever been subject to a UDRP case. And we're not aware, at least speaking for WIPO, cases of a single one of those actually having been successfully challenged in court. But apart from that, I think we all know, just sort of recalling that here collectively, that the board has given assurances to in shepherding through the expansion of the DNS of the, and this is a quote, the continuing availability of the existing long-standing and tested UDRP. This is an assurance that is on record. So that's there, and then there is, as Christina also referred to, there was the webinar, which attracted substantial expert participation. And then, of course, there was the report, which Christina just mentioned, which again attracted substantial observations. And WIPO would submit, in the friendliest of ways, absolutely, but WIPO would submit that if commitments and comments mean anything, then that should, for the time being, be the end of the matter when it comes to the status of the UDRP. Now, the thrust of the comments was essentially twofold. I say thrust because that's just my way of summarizing a rather overwhelming sentiment, subject to minorities that were also being expressed, of course. But the first one was the DNS needs stability. Right now, you know, this is not the time to risk destabilizing the one proven mechanism that is in place. And the second one, kind of a point of common sense, is that it's much better, of course, that if you want to review the functioning of the UDRP, that you do this when the other RPMs, which are supposed to work in concert with the UDRP, when those have had a chance to prove themselves or not. The background reason why we are quite pleased that that has been the sentiment so far is that unfortunately, and I say unfortunately very deliberately, it's clear that ICANN process, by whatever name, is just not really suited to improving the functionality of RPMs. And I don't need to document that and argue that point too hard, I think, but just would like to refer to the URS, which, with due respect, through various processes, has become a Chinese whisper of an effective light complement to GDRP. So that's just our reality today. One more thing, maybe, is that if and when it will come to a process by whatever name, I think we must all be prepared for a process which is going to be pretty contentious. If you look, for example, at the comments that have been submitted just in the context of ICANN's, you know, staff report and webinar, that's just a laundry list of pretty irreconcilable and, in some instances, rather wild wishes. So we know that we're going to be in for a long and agonizing process if we go this way. And the second point, and I would like to maybe leave at this point here, is if, and that has been stated by some proponents of looking at UDIP, if the purpose of such a process is to review whether it still does its job in combating cyber squatting, you know, 10 years, 11 years after it was created, then of course it makes perfect sense to start with the problem, to review first where the problem of cyber squatting stands today. You don't look at the solution in isolation of the problem, just like UDIP has actually been evolving very, very flexibly in the course of the evolution of the DNS itself. And so inevitably, by whatever name, an ICANN process that, you know, that meets standards of integrity and effectiveness is going to have to ask the harder questions. Who is doing the cyber squatting actively and passively? Where are the proceeds going of cyber squatting? How much of this is staying within the registration system itself, the budgets, the proceeds that are being made by the various stakeholders within the DNS? Those will be the hard questions that will have to be on the table if you want to look at the UDRP's reaction to those very phenomena. Thanks for having given this microphone.
Thank you, Eric. Anyone else? Sure. Sure.
Thanks. I do want to at least technically correct one thing and then share a comment. I can only speak personally, but Two Cows has had two WIPO decisions, while not adjudicated in court, settled, where the settlement, which is a public settlement, completely contradicted the UDRP decision. So I think that the fact that we didn't have to go, other than this is an order of an Ontario court that completely contradicts the UDRP finding. So I don't think your statement was accurate. The thing that I'd really, you know, and again, this goes to, I was struck as you were reading through and describing the process, you could have substituted a bunch of registrars talking about the RAA for all of the description of the bloody process, and everybody has a laundry list that they're making demands. It was, you know, there was great irony in that. And I think we should both you know, appreciate that we feel that way at times when we're going through these processes. There are a couple very simple things, you know, often as there are in the RAA, and I look to get them out and diffuse them, that really make so much of everything else go away. And I think those are very simply, I mean, you know, certainly there people have more, but simply having contracts and a mechanism that is an ongoing mechanism to deal with rules changes and allow community input into those rules changes would probably diffuse 90% of the noise around PDP reform. And that's something I'd really urge, you know, both the IPC and WIPO in particular to consider approaching on a bilateral or even unilateral basis. Thanks.
It's Nick Wood again, for the record. I was asked by INTA to chair a session on the UDRP in Washington, D.C. a month ago that looked at many of these issues. And my starting point was that, to use a phrase that someone else used on the panel, that you need to cut the grass sometime in a 10-year period, and that changes will be a good thing in some areas. And we had represented on that panel We had panelists, we had litigators, including people who whose practices are devoted to working for respondents. And much to my surprise, the view that came out at the end of it was actually no one who uses the system wants change at the moment, and that most of the drive for change that seemed to be coming from people who don't regularly use it, and that there was concern that at the moment when there is so much change happening, that this was not the time to do it. So I agree with both of you, and I think there should be some change, but I don't think it should happen now. And the people who use it didn't seem to want it.
I do want to nick on that, you know, this was, sorry if I could. Please. Thank you, because with that specific panel, you know, you should know that the back room, you know, when John in particular and I think it was Ari Goldberger were questioned as to why they said that in the domainer community, the answer was because we're so afraid that under change things might get even worse than they are now, and in the situation today, you know, generally a legitimate a domain holder is succeeding. It's that fear of getting worse that was really driving them. So please do understand that, as opposed to, you know, hey, there's not you know, change that they would really deeply like or see as fair.
If I may take over the microphone from Elliot here, and this is the last thing I'll say about it, because I don't want to monopolize this microphone here, and I don't want to get too incidental about it either. But maybe just two things. First of all, you know, cutting the grass. Our point is not that you could not look at UDIP. For example, I know that trademark owners want and to be or. You know, there are many things that trademark owners have on their wish list. I have seen loser pays. I will not say whether WIPO believes in the user pays model or not. You can look at the first process. But there are these enormous wish lists here, and so. But the question is not whether you can theoretically on paper improve the UDIP. If you put WIPO in the room with panelist David Bernstein and with respondent counsel John Berryhill, who, by the way, believes and is on record as saying that it's an extremely fair and functional system, and this is a respondent counsel, you know, one can come out with, you know, with ideas here about what you can do about UDIP. But the real, in my view, the real opportunity to make a difference in terms of RPMs on the second level is not to tinker with UDIP, but is to actually have a URS which is radically different from UDIP, in that you would not have a panel appointment with sufficient comeback opportunities for defaulting respondents. But that's an opportunity that unfortunately has gotten lost. This is just where we are. But tinkering with UDIP is not going to make anybody happy. And finally, just a more generic comment. You know, we follow not every file at ICANN, but we do go to the meetings, and we are very invested in how things are going with these RPMs. We are making a lot of comments and proposals over time. I would really expect ICANN to focus on its problems and not on its successes. I think it's a matter of common sense. I don't mean to speak for registrars and registries, but I think it's time to look at the problems and to stop trying to dissect the successes.
Christina?
Kind of not just taking a step back from it. There was an idea that was floated towards the end of the council discussion on the UDRP that seemed to have appeal to most of the constituencies and stakeholder groups. And that is the possibility that the council could ultimately deal with the issue by passing a motion saying, in effect, we recognize this is an important topic. We also recognize that there's a lot of change being introduced into the system. We recognize that the board has called for an evaluation of the RPMs in new GTLDs 18 months after the first GTLD launches. So we as a council are committing to essentially deferring action on this issue until that investigation and report is completed, and that we can take it into account on a more comprehensive basis. I think I am hopeful that that's ultimately where we'll end up, but I think it's still an open question.
Paul?
A couple of things. Firstly, that I think one of the reasons why UDRP decisions generally don't get challenged, at least in the U.S. courts, is that federal judges have consistently said that it's not real arbitration and therefore the court doesn't take any mind of it. That's pretty consistent in the case law. So whether or not UDRPs have been challenged, I don't know, is necessarily all that interesting of a point in terms of whether or not we should be opening up the UDRP for reform. But to the point of things getting worse for cyber squatters, I do think that that's precisely...
That's a gross misstatement. I said getting worse for domain holders, not cyber squatters.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about things getting worse for cyber squatters.
Then let's line up and say let's make it worse.
But in any event, I think that that should be the expectation. I think one of the things that the branding community learned through the new GTLD process is that all of our efforts to put forth reasonable, adoptable protections for brand owners and that we designed to balance various people's interests will be chopped away at every step of the process. And I think that obviously reasonable and adoptable are very important things to do, but I think you may see a completely different negotiation tact in the event the UDRP is opened. And someone mentioned the word wish list. I think that's a great term, but I think that sitting back and trying to put forth proposals that we think everybody should be willing to adopt is probably not where this will go. I think loser pays is just the beginning of the changes to the UDRP that the branding community will be seeking in the event that the mistake is made and this is reopened up at this point. And then also to the point of we have the staff telling us that they're going to get to their work when they can get to it and do the reports in a first-in, first-out basis. I do think that there is some reality of overload on the volunteer community that makes up ICANN. And so I think that jumping ahead at this point is a bad idea. And I also think that I don't mean to sound ominous, but for anybody who is simultaneously selling services to the branding community, for those people to be pushing for this right now is also a very bad idea for them.
Thank you, Paul. Anyone else have a comment?
Right.
Elliot?
There's a beautiful piece of form that I think we can use maybe to sort of launch from for future dialogue. Paul heard the term domain holder and cyber squatter synonymously. They were naturally, I just want to identify. I understand you. No, because mine's on.
Well, there it goes.
There we go.
Yeah, but Elliot, for the record, I did not make reference to your comment. I was making my own comment.
You said making things worse,
okay.
Elliot,
you clearly would like to characterize me however you'd like to, so go ahead.
No, Paul.
Okay,
Paul,
thank you.
What I want to do is I want to make the general point that too often those two terms are conflated, and that too often where we all end up in unproductive rhetoric is that legitimate domain holders are lumped in with cyber squatters. I mean, I think the best example, Paul, is something where we will deeply agree, which is loser pays. One of the reasons that in certain circumstances, Tucows is about something like 22-2 in UDRPs, and the two, again, we were successful in the Ontario courts with, loser pays for legitimate domain holders who don't abuse brand holders is a great thing, and that's exactly the kind of issue where I'd love to line up in a productive reform process and ask for that together. I think that would be fantastic. I think that one of the greatest ways forward, I talked about this as a departure for future discussions, is to really understand the distinction between those two groups, because that's where you get a John Berryhill saying, hey, the system ain't so bad right now, and that's where you get me saying loser pays, great idea. So, I'm looking for places for commonality, not to criticize that or to mischaracterize it. It was my quote with a changed word at the end.
Yeah, Elliot, we did this already, if you remember, at the .next conference where you and I were on the stage together, and I stipulated to the philosophical existence of domainers prospectors as opposed to cyber squatters, and I do that again today. It's also in my book. You can read it. I acknowledge their existence and the distinction.
The Brady on domain names, yours for.
Right. Get your copy today. Paul's doing a book signing tomorrow, if anyone's interested.
Okay, Deutsch on domain names is coming out tomorrow. I just read it 5 minutes ago. So many of my colleagues have just nailed the issue on the head. I think it's not a great idea to open this issue up. It's really just a Trojan horse. While we'd all love loser pays, I think the reality is that anything that happens inside this ICANN process will get diluted to the point where a remedy, a valuable remedy that's working today, won't be available in the future to brand holders. In the past 12 months, we've won back 1.5 million domain names from bringing 10 UDRPs. We use it very judiciously and carefully. We expect with new GTLDs, we're going to use it a lot more. And the thought that it would be eroded is very disturbing. And if something is going to be measured, I think we should look at registrars' portfolios, how much of that portfolio comes from cyber squatting. You know, that's a key issue as well. But, you know, in my mind, this is the one remedy that we're holding on to that seems to work. We had a case this year where the judge cited to the infringer owning or having been ruled against 200 times in UDRP decisions and found that was the basis for contributory cyber squatting. So it does have value. Yes, it does get misused now and again. There's some wrong decisions that come out of it, but it's not perfect, but it works pretty well.
Thank you, Sarah. Anyone else have any comments or questions? Great. I just want to also acknowledge that Christine Drain in the chat room just supported Nick's comments earlier, and I apologize for not mentioning that sooner, but I want to make sure our remote participants are feeling heard, since they literally can't be. Anything else? That actually exhausts and probably went beyond our original agenda. Does anyone else have any comments or agenda items they'd like to add at the end before we close our meeting today? All right, well, I want to thank everyone very much for coming, and we really appreciate you being here, and look forward to seeing you the rest of the meeting.